connecting the subtleties behind what they say to a life narrative, to deep-rooted value, to emotional meaning, that's when we really start to get down to the nitty-gritty. And it is very hard to hear those things, especially when the other side is hell-bent on throwing numbers at us. Right? Because every so once in a while we get into a negotiation where the other side seems to be, no matter what, we are going to haggle over this number. And that's why I'm here today. For those of you that deal with procurement, or maybe you're on the procurement side, you probably find yourself very frustrated on the phone with a procurement person that has no idea about the last 18 months that you spent with their internal team creating this program, creating this system, and all the intricacies that are involved. And then they put some new schmo on the phone that's from procurement and says, you got to take 20% off. And that person does not understand all the trouble you went through with their internal team to build where we are. And we're already cutting costs because we're trying to make it work. And now I'm talking to you, want to get another 20% off, right? And then we get caught up in, no, I can't do 20%. Well, you have to go 20% and we can't do business. Well, maybe we could do 10%, right? And you're already compromising against yourself. What is the deep-rooted value issue that is overlooked when you're talking to this procurement person, right? Because they've hit you with an anchor, right? You got on the phone and you got smacked with an anchor. And it's called an anchor on purpose because it feels like it's tied to our legs and we are sinking as a result, right? It is designed to cause emotional turmoil in the person that is being used on. The exact same reason the great philosopher Mike Tyson said, right? Everybody's got a plan till you get punched in the mouth. And that's what anchoring is designed to do. And we can get so caught up in, well, do we name price first? Well, how do we combat this anchoring? And at the same time, we're overlooking the deep-rooted issue. And so if a procurement person is on the phone, I'll give you some insight into this already if you haven't already heard it. If you are someone who speaks to a procurement department, if you were talking to procurement, who has the leverage? In a procurement negotiation, right? You're you, we're us, and we are talking to procurement on the other end. Who, in fact, right, when we think of leverage in a traditional sense, which is not something we bring up often, but it's worth understanding and wrapping our minds around because we're going to deal with people that think in terms of traditional leverage. And understanding how to influence that mindset starts with us understanding the reasons behind this traditional leverage idea. And so what do you think? Who's got the leverage there? You're on the phone with procurement. They throw a high anchor at you or a low anchor at you. Who's actually got the leverage? Is it you or is it procurement? Keith, you do. And go ahead, while people are typing up stuff in here, Keith, if you could add to that, what makes you say that? You say, I got the leverage when I'm talking to procurement. What makes you actually say that? And while we're thinking this through, another way to look at this is, I can now ask them questions. Ah, very good. That's a good start. And if you want to continue to build that out, what else makes you feel like you got leverage in a traditional sense? Please add to that. Another way to look at this, and I imagine a lot of you are familiar with it because I know several of you have read the book and have done the masterclass as well. In a hostage negotiation scenario, who's got the leverage when it comes to the traditional sense of leverage? Is it the hostage taker or is it the victim's family? And when I say victim's family, right, the people who are negotiating on behalf of the victim, it's usually a representative of the family if we're talking international hostage negotiation or government representative from that country, as opposed to an actual American FBI agent like Chris Voss on the phone personally. But who's got the leverage in that sense? The hostage taker or the victim family, right? And this is very similar to this procurement approach that I'm talking about now, and also in general sense of traditional leverage. Ah, all right, we got some good stuff in here. All right, so Keith, right, you can probe more for their point of view. Very good, I like that. I will add to that, Keith, there are some predictable things about their point of view that inform you when you go deal with a procurement representative. One of the things that's very predictable is, for all intents and purposes, their job is on the line with every single deal that they make. And they are personally worried about getting fired if they don't make a good deal, which is why they're happy to be an attack dog, because they're not going to lose points for being an attack dog and jumping down your throat. They're going to lose points for losing deals. And so that instantly makes you the one that's got the leverage, because their job is riding on you, right? Their entire future is riding on you. And that puts a tremendous amount of pressure on them, and they get yelled at, right? But if you're in procurement, or ever have been, you got a boss that walks by every once in a while and goes like, get it done, right? They're constantly got people breathing down their neck. Let's see, Donnie, if they give price first, I have info I can use a counter offer. Very good. And Lyle, which I may have totally butchered that, please forgive me. When it comes to the hostage negotiation, right, the victim's family, because there's only one buyer, whoever's the less desperate has the leverage. Ah, another good one. Very good, Christopher. Right, this idea of he or she who cares least wins. And we have complete control over what our outward persona, what it dictates, right, what it indicates. And right, so all of this is a really long way of saying, right, for all intents and purposes, we can throw traditional bargaining or traditional leverage away, because it's an emotional concept that will get us confused. It's easy to say the hostage taker has all the leverage because they got our, you know, they got our mom, they got our daughter. But exactly Lyle's point, they have one buyer. Right? If you think of a hostage negotiator or a hostage taker as a business in the private sector, if you had one other business in the entire world that would buy your product or service, how much leverage do you actually have? Right? And that's the position that hostage takers put themselves in. With procurement, they got one company on the entire planet that has built this system or this process that's been designed over the last 18 months to help their own personal company grow. And part of what's even more important than making this deal that they, where they cut the legs out from under, or chop the legs out from under somebody, is if they lose it at all, they've thrown 18 months of their company's very specific efforts to design a new system out the window. And that hurts them way more than whatever the price point is, right? And so we can get really caught up when it comes to this anchoring idea and this traditional leverage idea. We can get ourselves wrapped around the axle on it. Now, what's great about anchoring, as I mentioned earlier, it puts us in the perfect spot to say, how am I supposed to do that should the situation or the moment allow for it? The other thing that is also very, very apparent when someone throws a high anchor is they got a lot of movement. They got a whole lot of movement. And I will tell you, and this is something I struggle with personally, one of my triggers, as it were, that drives me nuts. And I got to get better at this. When I feel like someone is anchoring me, I feel like it's a completely manipulative move. And at that point, it's like, well, you know, the gloves are off, right? We're no longer back boxing with these 12 pound gloves on, right? Now this is a bare knuckle fight. This has just turned into a street fight, and you set the stage for it because you threw the anchor first. So that's the first thought, right? They're gonna have a lot of movement if they anchor first. Leaves us in a place to say, it seems like you're willing to walk away. or how am I supposed to do that? Or it seems like you got a reason for throwing that number out there, right? It gives us any number of options when they go first. The biggest caution, right, in addition to what I mentioned, is this idea of splitting the difference. That's usually the result of anchoring, which is the main motivation for why we named the book the way we did. And, right, the cliche that I'm sure you've all already heard, he or she, I'm going to screw this up now. He or she who defines the distance is often a poor judge of it. And I know I didn't get that completely right, but what where we're going is, right, when they've defined this anchor, chances are whatever the midway point is that has come up as a result is still above where they'd be willing to settle, right? The point of anchoring is to move the midway point because splitting the difference is such a common thing. And so if I anchor at 600 and I'm willing to settle at, you know, at 2 or something like that, right? Chances are I'm going to end up somewhere around 3 and I'll still be better off. And so because of it's such a manipulative approach, it tends to set me off. And I guess where I'm really going is don't be like me, right? And get so angrily triggered by an anchor. Instead, look at it as a point of information gathering that better informs us on what their mindset is and what their ability to be collaborative is, right? Another kind of check off is if they're willing to anchor, then they're probably not looking to be collaborative.